Our sense of smell is one of our oldest yet least understood senses in the human body. We know so much more about our sense of taste and sight and hearing and touch than we do about our sense of smell. This makes it extraordinarily difficult to find good research on the impact of aroma on the formation of memories, on the healing of trauma, on simply how essential oils engage with our brain and with our body at large. Today, I'm very excited to be interviewing Dr. Eric Zielinski because he and I talk about what does the research actually have to say about essential oils and how can we stop trying to make essential oils prescriptive and instead make them intuitive and a piece, a stepping stone, one thing that we do each day that is a joyful part of our self-care, healing, and wellness journey. Let's get to the show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast that helps you find fulfillment amidst chaos. On this show, I interview thought leaders, doctors, creatives, spiritual gurus, and game changers who inspire you to pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Dr. Eric Zielinski is the author of two national best-selling books, The Healing Power of Essential Oils and The Essential Oils Diet. He pioneered natural living and biblical health education, and his background is quite varied. He started as an aromatherapist and is also a public health researcher and chiropractor. His diverse background and education led him to start Natural Living Family, his website and blog, with his wife to help everyday people learn how to use essential oils safely and effectively. His website now reaches more than 3 million health seekers every single year. Natural Living Family has become a wonderful resource for essential oil education, as well as education that is focused on everyday integration of health and wellness practices into our lives. Dr. Eric Zielinski, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Well, thank you. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Am I the first person to be talking about essential oils on your show?
Well, one of them for sure. I have certainly talked about essential oils. I also interviewed my friend Samantha Wright, but we were more talking about podcasting. But of course, her podcast is about essential oils, and that's how she and I know each other. And so I've talked about them, but I do think this is our first in-depth conversation about essential oils. And the reason that I wanted to talk to you is because there are a lot of people out there who say a lot of things about essential oils, but you and I are on the same wavelength in that we want what we say to be evidence-based as well as have the application of everyday use and common sense reason. And over the course of many years of kind of crafting this relationship with both the didactic information and the everyday experience of essential oils, you and I both have found them to be an indispensable part of a daily wellness routine. For me, it's all about the stress management and the relaxation potential and the intentions that can be put around wellness practices when you combine them with essential oils. Did you ever have an aha moment where you just kind of got it with essential oils? Because something had to have inspired you to go down this years-long journey of study and advocacy about essential oil. So what was that first step along your journey that really sparked your intuition?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I'll tell you, being one of the first to address this, I take that very seriously because, you know, I oftentimes, to answer your question in a roundabout way, I'm oftentimes one of the first interviews that people ever do on essential oils for a number of their podcasts or TV or radio. And I guess that was an aha moment early on. It was that I was a public health researcher. I was a contractor publishing in journals and doing white papers and things. And one of my clients several years ago commissioned me to write a series of public health reports on essential oils. And the aha moment at that point was, why aren't I hearing more about this stuff? I mean, it was literally my job to read hundreds of research studies and then to evaluate the potential therapeutic efficacy of balancing blood sugar, helping with blood pressure, stress, anxiety management, mood boosting, even digestive concerns. And I was like, what is this stuff? Like, why haven't I been confronted with this before? Beside maybe some, you know, random aromatherapy blog or whatever. And that was it, Doc. That was it. It was the motivation behind this information needs to get out there. And because I don't represent any company, I don't sell essential oils. I'm unique in the fact that you could call an unbiased perspective, right? In the research world, there's a financial bias. And, you know, when you write a paper and publish it, you have to put down if there's any sort of financial confliction. And so I can openly talk about what the research says about oils, and I don't have to have a disclaimer. I'm like, look, I'm a user. My family's a user. My wife's been using oils since she's been a teenager. And so I feel that was much needed. And quite frankly, up until this day, last I checked, I'm still literally one of the only people in the world that do this. Mm-hmm. You don't meet people that are not associated with one brand and has a reach like I do, which we service millions of people every year. So I take that very much to heart. And so everything that I do, I come from that place, that evidence-based, but also, like you said, also that practical place, because I want this to be approachable for people. I don't want people to have to be overwhelmed. I don't want you to think you have to go through a 300-hour certification program just to be able to use the little drops in this bottle. Like, I think that's where the other side of the pendulum needs to be swung more in the middle.
So talk to me a little bit about the history of essential oils, because what you're speaking to really like hits me at home in that it would seem that essential oils would be very intuitive because humans have used them for so many years, and yet we have medicalized them so much that we're like, well, how many drops for this purpose? Where did we go awry in our understanding of plant medicine as it relates to essential oils? Because at some point, humans used essential oils. They were a part of currency. They were a part of trade. And then they weren't. How did we lose touch with this natural substance?
It was in the mid-40s. Everything changed with the advent of the antibiotic. And, you know, most people don't realize this, but combat medicine, we're talking the medics on the front lines of World War I, World War II, were using essential oils to combat infection, gangrene. I mean, the antibiotic wasn't invented then. So we're talking tea tree and lavender, and depending again on where you were from. If you were from Australia, the medics would use eucalyptus. If you would be from America, they would have a tendency to use oregano or clove or whatever it might be. In France, obviously lavender. And when that shiny white pill came in the mid-40s, you almost can't blame people. Because again, let's be real. This bottle is full of volatile organic compounds that have a potent ability to help a number of different things. But you know what? It smells like something like oregano, right? You want to smell like pizza. It smells, maybe have like a spicy smell like clove. It could get messy. It could get oily, right? It's not easy. It's not like a pill you can pop in your mouth and go along your day. And the reality is our ancestors have used herbal medicines from the beginning, but it's time intensive. And you see this inundation of convenience. It's no joke. It's no coincidence that that's the same time that everyone started getting a refrigerator, and everyone started looking at other ways of living convenient lives. And one thing it dawned on me was that convenience never comes without a cost. Even the refrigerator. I know it's outside the topic of our conversation, but look at what we've done with food. We've sterilized food. We don't even eat real live fermented foods like we used to. I'm Polish. That's where Zelensky comes from. My ancestors used to have a lot of cabbage at the end of harvest season. And they used to ferment it and you call it sauerkraut. Otherwise, the cabbage would go bad and go rancid 300-400 years ago. We don't ferment foods anymore. So what does that mean? We don't have the microbiome. We don't have the proper soil-based organisms in our system anymore. Convenience comes with a cost. So when we said, hey, you want your food not to go bad anymore? Of course, I don't have to go through all that work. Here's a refrigerator. Well, next thing you know, we start seeing an influx of gut disorders. Well, I don't think it's coincidence. So anyway, at the end of the day, we've lost, but nice thing is, everything has come full circle. We've lost the efficacy of a lot of the things that we do with nature because of convenience. But now it's been 60, 70 years since this convenience trend has finally hit the wall. And people are realizing, okay, maybe convenience does come with a cost. And now we've invented antibiotic-resistant bacteria like MRSA. No one ever talked about MRSA 60 years ago.
Well, it didn't exist.
Exactly. But you know what? Research has shown that essential oils can literally kill MRSA. Well, that's interesting because no drug on the planet can touch MRSA. So you're saying now a natural therapy has the effect of killing something that medicine can't even, that medicine basically created a Franken microbe.
Well, we certainly have some antibiotics that can treat MRSA, but to your point, it's ever evolving. It's ever shifting and ever changing. And it's interesting. I just learned, have you ever heard of the Flexner report?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had never heard of the Flexner report until just a week or two ago. And coinciding with this shift that you're talking about also coincided with a major shift in education and how we were taught medicine was practiced. And this is where we start to lose this adherence to herbal remedies and tinctures and concoctions and eating off the land. And we also have so much industrialization happening that our soils are just getting worse and worse. So you have spent so many years researching essential oils. And I think that because we've lost touch with this ability to follow our instincts, there's a lot of like major concerns about essential oils. I know I have myths that I like to dispel. What are some of the top myths that you think still get told about essential oils that you would like people to have a more reasonable perspective? How do you do it in your life? Give us some practical tips that can make people feel better about the sensationalism that they read online.
Oh, good question. So I guess let's call out the elephant in the room. First of all, roughly 75 to 80% of all oils on the market are adulterated, right? According to various reports that you might read and various researchers and chemists that evaluate the GCMS, the gas chromatography mass spectrometry reports, they're the ones who really look at the lifeblood of the oil to see if there's contaminants. So with that said, a big, big piece of essential oil labeling and marketing is purity. And it's basically the race to the purest, essentially. It's like, I have the purest oil. We have the best oil. Well, what I've realized, and it's kind of common sense when you think of it, but what hit me was putting things into perspective is that number one, purity doesn't guarantee safety. I'll explain that. And purity doesn't guarantee therapeutic efficacy. All right. What are we talking about here? Safety first. Just because an oil is pure, it doesn't mean that you could still put a drop of oregano in your mouth and not expect to get burned. I mean, just flat out. It's a matter of people are realizing, oh, this thing is good. It's natural. I was the same way. And I literally developed acid reflux because I was putting oregano and tea tree in water to help with, quote, immune function and trying to fight a microbe that I thought I had. And I literally developed acid reflux. It burned my mouth. I'm like, okay. If anything, the more pure, if that's a way of looking at it, if an oil is pure, it's more potentially harmful because it's more potent than something with an adulterant in it. I want to paint that picture because a lot of the oils on the market are adulterated with a carrier oil or some sort of synthetic that has really no therapeutic value. So I just want to point out that just because it's pure doesn't mean it's going to be safe. You still have to use them the right way. And here's the other thing. There's no guarantee that they're going to work. Now, here's a big one. If there's one thing that I've seen, are disenfranchised essential oil users. Boy, they want them to do XYZ and they get the bottle and nope, peppermint didn't take away the headache. And so you know what? I don't know if you've experienced this, but what I've heard and what I've experienced now teaching millions of people about how to use oils, the knee-jerk reaction is to blame the oil. Oh, this is junk. It's to blame the oil. It's not pure or it's not good. Well, hold on a second. And you can explain more as a pharmacist and your background. Our biochemistry changes moment by moment, depending on our thoughts, the chemicals in the air, what we're breathing, what we put on our skin, what we eat. If the chemistry in our body does not properly interact with the chemistry in the essential oil, chances are we're not going to get a desired result. And sometimes things just don't work the way that we want them to. It doesn't mean the oil's bad. And that's the one thing I get. Oh, I tried that. It didn't work. It's kind of like people saying, well, I tried XYZ for MRSA and it didn't work. Or I tried this and it didn't work. Well, we don't blame medicine per se. We go back to your doctor and he or she then practices what they learned and try something new. That's what I've really been trying to do, doc. My goal is, as I was trained to practice chiropractic, as you're trained to practice, you know, pharmacy, I'm trying to help people to train them to practice aromatherapy or practice the use of essential oils. And it takes some give and take. And so why this is so important is because purity doesn't guarantee therapeutic efficacy. Purity doesn't guarantee safety. It puts things in a perspective. Now you could be patient with the process. Now you're not going to have unrealistic expectations where now you're not going to be tempted to go back to, let's say, Xanax to deal with some panic or go to some Advil, overuse that for some chronic pains. Maybe this will motivate you and me to look at and go back to the drawing board and be like, okay, maybe peppermint isn't the right thing for me right now for headaches. What else is? And that's where you enter my world. And now it's like, let's have fun. Like my wife says, the Betty Crocker test kitchen. Let's go back and let's see what works.
I love that because we started talking about how people try to medicalize everything. And what you're saying is stop trying to make everything prescriptive and instead look at yourself and your body and your health and wellness journey as your own individualized experience. And how do we make that individual experience non-punitive? How do we make it safe? How do we make it joyful? How do we make it a growth opportunity where you're learning about the products that you're using as well as your own response, a part of the process? I loved what you said about purity doesn't guarantee safety and it doesn't guarantee efficacy. And I think that that's critically important. Use the example of if I put a drop of oregano on my tongue, it's going to burn. My example is always people reach out to me and they're like, didn't someone die from using essential oils? And I'm like, yes. In this study, this woman drank 35 milliliters of eucalyptus oil. Let's not do that. And I think that there is that problem of like, it's natural, so it's safe. And that's not true. And then the efficacy, it seems like guest after guest on the show, we all come down to you have to be in your own body and listen to it and take the advice of others and learn from others, but also learn from yourself. Now, where you ended your discussion was you really talked about, you mentioned one drug, Xanax, and of course there's no direct correlation between if you're on this drug, use this oil, but for me, the interactions of essential oils directly with our brain are bar none when it compares to, I mean, maybe as a pharmacist, I could make the argument that inhaling nicotine has approximately the similar effect on your brain as far as being instantaneously released. But we don't want to go down that nicotine direction. We want to go down healthy and healing directions. My audience is familiar with the limbic system, but maybe tell us a little bit about your understanding of how essential oils communicate with our bodies. Maybe talk about the brain a little bit, the skin, breathing in. Just how do these chemical messengers interact with us to produce positive effects on our health?
Well, you mentioned the instant, and I'm glad you mentioned that about nicotine. The olfactory system is your primal system, your primal sense. It's the only system, it's the only neurological pathway that bypasses the thalamic relay, which means it goes straight to the brain. Your pain sensation, your other sensations, your sight, everything, your taste has to be processed in the brain through a relay center, not olfaction. And why is that important? Well, because it's instant, it's direct communication that's unfiltered. And the reason why is because at a very primal sense, again, the limbic system is known as our primal brain. I mean, this is what really connects us with the animal world and how important the sense of smell is. I mean, how many animals are virtually blind, but they live and they move based off of their sense of smell? We've lost touch to that, but whether you're looking from an evolutionary perspective or a design perspective like where I come from, I see it as a gift from God because we needed and still do need our sense of smell to protect us. So when you smell fire, you're getting out of Dodge. When you smell a noxious odor, when you're putting your nose into a plant, that lets your body know that you probably don't want to eat it. Just think about this. There was no book of edible herbs and edible foods that Adam and Eve had, you know what I mean? Like our ancestors didn't have that. They had to go trial and error. And many of our ancestors ate themselves to death, not realizing that they were eating toxic food. Smell, because here's the thing. Touch doesn't help you. Sight doesn't help you. Taste, well, you taste it, you're dead. So it was really that smell. And that's why we need to reincorporate that back into our lives, because the healing power of the olfactory system is one of the most untapped scientific marvels that now, because of the advent of aromatherapy, I would say advent of it, meaning there's been a resurgence of interest with the aromatherapy. People are recognizing that your limbic system, as you mentioned, controls your autonomic function, your heart rate, your breathing rate, your blood pressure. And of course, it's your primal mood center, your emotion and your memory. So when we're looking at coming through the throes of what could arguably be one of the most chaotic, traumatic experiences of humankind in the modern civilization, right, 2020 and now 2021, what does that mean for us? What does that mean for how many people right now that are managing emotions and mood and memories that might haunt them for the rest of their lives? And it all starts at the limbic system. And quite frankly, a lot of it starts with what we inhale and what we smell. And the problem is we've been stuck in this little box that we call a home. And roughly up until the pandemic, most people on average spent 93% of their time indoors. Now, we have no studies to prove this because the research is still being done. But just, I think common sense would tell us 99 to 100% of most people's time are indoors right now. I mean, just chew on that for a minute. What are you breathing in all day long? Are you taking fresh air breaks? Are you giving yourself a relief from some noxious chemicals, artificial fragrances, the harmful VOCs, those volatile organic compounds that are being emitted from your carpet? If you live in an apartment, bless your heart, you have virtually no control what's being done through the air vents and all that system. Why am I mentioning this? Because what we're doing is we're constantly stimulating neurological inflammation because of the toxins that we're breathing inside. You couple that with stress and anxiety, no wonder suicide rate is through the roof and depression and anxiety. So if there's anything we could do, practically speaking, to bring outside in, to mean the outside environment inside, well, let's do it. And that's where hoping to get a chance to talk a little bit about forest bathing and why essential oils are so important, because at least you have the ability to transform your environment the way that you want to transform them.
Before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors. We all thought that 2021 was going to be different, yet here we are, not able to travel like we once did, and we're all in need of rest, relaxation, and rejuvenation. Bottom line, I, as much as you, want to get away. That's why I'm hosting the Rustic Renewal Yoga Retreat. It's an all-inclusive retreat that helps you to renew your mind, body, and spirit. From April 6th to April the 11th in Salty, Georgia, you'll be getting together with a group of people dedicated to renewing, relaxing, and rejuvenating our souls so that we become better prepared to deal with the ups and downs of our everyday. I'd love to see you there. I'm going to be hosting, teaching yoga, the Aroma Freedom Technique, using essential oils, and maybe even helping out in the kitchen. We'll be staying at a beautiful retreat center right in the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains, taking hikes, getting massages, experiencing Reiki, and simply celebrating the joy of being together. To learn more about the retreat and to reserve your spot, head to www.lindseyelmore.com/retreat. That's www.lindseyelmore.com/retreat. I'll see you in Georgia. And now, let's get back to the show. Absolutely. Okay, so thinking about that forest bathing concept where you're intentionally going out into nature and getting exposed to tree oils that are out in the environment, you're getting exposed to the negative ions that the earth is giving you. Talk to us about some of the other health benefits of being out in nature and how, when you use essential oils, you can bring some of those benefits inside.
Yeah, research has recently been done. And interestingly, you know, forest bathing is a relatively new therapy that's recognized nationally at the national level in Japan. Now, people have been forest bathing from the beginning of time. They just didn't call it anything. I mean, same thing like aromatherapy. People have been burning leaves and roots and incense and making salve since the beginning of time. They just didn't call it aromatherapy. So Japan actually has, it's part of their like Ministry of Health system. They have forest bathing centers around the nation. And they actually have doctors and pharmacists and psychologists at forest bathing centers doing pre and post physical and mental evaluations on people to guide them on how to be outside in nature most productively. Like why? Why go through all this effort? Well, because research has shown this is the big thing and why this is in context of our shelter in place environment right now. Is forest bathing has been shown to increase immune function, specifically natural killer cells. And what that looks like is if you were to spend just 2 hours outside, again, that seems like a lot, and I'm not saying something we need to do every day, but research has shown if you were to spend 2 hours in a forest or in a park that's densely rooted with trees, the benefit that you get to your natural killer cells, which by the way, are the cells that kill cancer and help ward off disease and vectors, it lasts for over 30 days. The benefit of 1 2-hour forest bathing session. And so what researchers have done in Japan is really trying to find out, okay, how far reaching are these effects? And you mentioned you're breathing in the volatile organic compounds from the trees and plants, but what does that mean? Like we're talking limonene and pinene, which are the two primary chemicals that you're getting being emitted from the tree, you know, the pine, essentially pine. Right? I love Douglas fir and there's silver fir and there's cedar wood and sandalwood, but in frankincense, everyone loves frankincense. Why? Because of the pinene. And so when you're looking at the tree oils, when you're looking at the trees, these essential oils are extremely anti-inflammatory. In this discussion of chronic disease, our enemy is inflammation. Now, we will hopefully talk a little bit about that in a minute, but what causes the inflammation? And oftentimes it has to do with emotional and mental stress and the stressors that are around us. When you put yourself in this environment where, and let's clarify what forest bathing is and what it isn't. It's not going outside with your cell phone and your planner and running, right? It's not doing something with intentional purpose of, okay, I'm going to get my 2 hours in or my 15 minutes. I'm going to run this 5K. I'm going to blah, blah. No, it's literally being. Now, you and I are a lot alike. We're human doers. We probably struggle with the human being aspect of being, right? We are doers. And those of you listening, you understand what I mean. It's a matter of taking out the doing and putting into the being. And so it literally means just being outside with no expressed intent or purpose other than to enjoy yourself, to breathe, to listen. To some people like to do yoga. Some people like just lie in the grass. Me, we have a new baby and I put baby Ezekiel on my little baby Bjorn chest carrier and I just go walking, like not fast. Just enough to get some movement because I sit down all day long as a researcher and I'm sitting down right now. I got to get up. So for me, being out there, but what it does, it literally is like taking an antidepressant. It has that same effect, the hormone response, the endorphin response at the neurological level, what it does to GABA and other neurotransmitters, it allows your body to get out of this constant sympathetic fight or flight reaction that we're in all day long because of stress and allows us to rest and digest. It triggers that parasympathetic function. So now we could heal. And at an emotional level, it's wonderful. But like we talked about physiologically, research has shown through blood panels and analyses, it boosts immune function that's long lasting. And so what we try to do is we try to incorporate this into our regular life. And I got to say, I'm with you. I have 5 kids. I'm busy. I don't have time to go outside every day for 2 hours, but every day I try to go outside at the very least for a few minutes, at the very least to get some fresh air. Like right after this call, I got a date with outside just to get some fresh air for a second. And thankfully I live in a neighborhood with a lot of trees and we have a park that I could just walk to. And I try to make that a regular place. But the thing is, to bring it back to home, to answer the other part of your question, research has shown that you could bring that same efficacy inside. Why? Because those volatile organic compounds that are being emitted from the trees, you could put in your diffuser. You could put in your, let me see, my aromatherapy inhaler. How cool is this? Maybe you're on the subway. Maybe you're in an office setting where you can't diffuse, but you could still buy one of these aromatherapy inhalers on Amazon for a couple bucks. Soak this cotton swab with some tree oils. And I love, my favorite blend right now is Douglas fir and orange. I just love it. I love it for a million reasons, but I love how mood boosting, because you know, orange is a proven antidepressive, rich in D-limonene, which is great for natural killer boosts and in inflammation. And it just helps you feel good. It's like, how do you not feel good after smelling a citrus oil, right? And when you add a fir oil or a tree oil to it, even frankincense, if that's all that you have, has a wonderful blend. And so you could take it on the go. So you could literally bring trees inside. But here's another aspect of it. Secondary to the sense of smell is your sense of sight. And that's where now research has shown where they've had hospital patients post-surgery in rooms that have no visual outlook to trees or nature. You're basically, your window's looking at a wall. Ugh, my heart goes out to you if you're stuck in a room in a hospital. Versus stuck in a room in a hospital that looks at trees. They found that the speed of recovery, that they found that people feel better, like you will get better and you'll get out of the hospital quicker if you got a view of nature. So you could similar, not to a same profound effect, you could stimulate the same healing effects by just looking at nature. So what does that mean? Well, try to maybe have your office near a window, maybe put some plants inside your house, like do what you got to do to make outside in, and you can transform your entire environment. And next thing you know, you start feeling pretty good.
But listen, I get it. They're mood elevating and they can make you feel good. But I think a lot of people doubt that there is real robust evidence about essential oils, especially because they're so individualized and especially because it doesn't make big drug companies money to do epic research projects on them. So the research becomes very conflicting. What, in your opinion, for our very analytical listeners, are the essential oils that have the most robust evidence behind them that you can say, look, even if you're a skeptic, here are a few things that have real published evidence behind them that you've also validated as true in your own life with your own family?
Well, truth be told, we don't have deep pockets. Natural health doesn't have deep pockets like Big Pharma. Truth be told, you're not going to find a research study evaluating chemotherapy versus essential oils in a randomized control. Why? Because that could prove fatal and people aren't willing to take that risk. That's the reason why, primarily, is to have an IRB, an institutional review board, to actually approve a study, it has to be deemed at least safe and effective for potentially sound reasons. So at this point, there are hundreds of studies that show how essential oils have an anti-cancer proliferative effect on animals and in vitro cells in a petri dish, but you're not going to find any on humans in that sense. You'll find how essential oils can help people manage the symptoms of radiation burns and pain. There's a ton. And I quote in my book, The Essential Oils Apothecary, that's coming out, I quote, it's like the most exhaustive lit review the non-researcher, the layperson can get. I took all the research about all the different oils and all the different studies on animal, human, and cells in a petri dish in vitro, and I created a chart to let people know there is substantial research to suggest that essential oils can help. And when it comes to the actual human trials, it typically has to do with emotion and physical symptoms like pain and nausea. But they're done, and they're done in robust. And the thing is that, interestingly, kind of heartbreakingly, as an American, I'm not proud to say that most studies aren't done here. Most studies are done in Middle Eastern countries and Asia. And Iran, out of all places, like a lot of studies in Iran. And why? Well,
they have a marketplace, for one. They have exports of essential oils in mass quantity.
You know why, right? Uh-huh. And so for the end of the day, when people are looking for evidence-based therapeutic efficacy of using essential oils, you're going to find a lot of research when it comes to sleep, when it comes to stress, when it comes to mood boosting. And we're seeing more and more and more when it comes to digestive concerns. And even, you know, one thing, Doc, that really kind of struck me was the amount of research done on aromatherapy hand massage, especially with patients with Alzheimer's and dementia. And it started to dawn on me, especially in this light of social distancing, which, by the way, I think we need to call out the elephant in the room. If you feel necessary to distance yourself because of a concern of getting an infection, physically distance yourself, but don't socially distance yourself.
Totally agree. It's a great change of language.
Right? Please think about that. Let just let that settle in. Let that settle in, because I mentioned earlier in passing, but I mean, at one point in the pandemic, more people were killing themselves, dying of suicide in Japan than people that are dying of COVID. This is the danger of true social isolation. And what does that mean for Alzheimer's patients, especially patients in nursing homes? They're isolated. And they oftentimes, and now now people literally can't see their family. So you have people, elderly patients, who have no physical touch at all. If they do any physical touch, it has to do with like a nursing setting where they're being helped with bedpans. And so when you take somebody, you grab their hand and you get some targeted essential oils, and let's use lavender, for example, because there's a lot of research on that. And you start to massage their hand very gently, very soothing. That stimulates a lot of oxytocin, and it stimulates a lot of love and the hormones and the emotions that go with that. But it also gets those essential oils into the skin. And we know that they're transdermal. They penetrate to the cellular level. They're lipophilic, hydrophobic, they're fat loving, water hating, volatile organic compounds. They are transmissible through into the bloodstream. And so now when you do that And I would suggest get a carrier oil, whatever your fancy, sweet almond, jojoba, even coconut. Hey, you need to go no further than your pantry. Get some olive oil, for crying out loud, and put, you know, maybe a teaspoon and a teaspoon of olive oil and a couple drops of lavender, and give your partner, your lover, your friend, your child, or if you're alone, yourself. Because you could still stimulate that yourself, even by giving yourself a little bit of touch. And you just massage yourself. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Next thing you know, research has shown those compounds, especially like the linalool and linoleic acetate in the lavender, gets in your bloodstream within minutes, within 20 minutes. The full concentration of the oils that can get you, the chemicals in the oil that can get into your bloodstream, are detected. But here's the key though. Within an hour and a half or 2 hours, blood analysis have shown the chemical constituents are gone. What does that mean? They don't disappear. They're metabolized. You could speak to you. Hey, correct me on this, because I've said this umpteen times. You're going to be hard pressed finding any pharmaceutical on the planet that can be completely metabolized by the body. I don't know if there is one.
Well, I think that there are many pharmaceuticals that are metabolized and excreted from the body, but I think what makes essential oils so distinctly different is that most of the essential oil metabolism is basic chemistry. It's reduction and oxidation, these really simple basic processes, not what we see with not only pharmaceuticals, but petro-based toxins, environmental toxins, estrogenic toxins, that those have to go through conjugation in the liver. And maybe that conjugate didn't work, so you pull that off and make a new conjugate. And you're constantly battling to make something that so desperately wants to be fat-soluble, water-soluble. Essential oils are a little bit different because they're like, I love being fat soluble, but hey guys, if you bust me apart, I'll be water soluble and I'll go. And the other thing that is so special about essential oils is the body is not like, oh my God, we have to get rid of this. The body is like, oh wow, a methyl group, or oh wow, an oxygen, or oh wow, these little bits of molecules that are very easy for me to metabolize and to transform into other things. And I completely agree with you. You know, this from my pharmacy world is kinetics, is pharmacokinetics research. How fast does it get in and how fast does it get out? And you can see evidence after exposure to thyme essential oil of thymol in the urine within 15 minutes. So it's getting in, it's doing its thing, and it's getting out very, very quickly. Now, I want to go back to something that you just said, because I think it's so important to always come back to basics. And like, let's not make this too complicated. Let's keep it really simple. You know, you said that there is good research in sleep, stress, mood, and gut. What if we just started there? And the example you gave of hand massages harkens back to something that I have talked about with so many guests and that's so important to me. Healing, in a lot of ways, is about physical touch, and it's about the emotional connection far beyond whatever the intervention is. So if you and your family can craft a few loving, compassionate routines around sleep, stress, mood, and digestion, I feel like we would all be living just a little bit of a healthier life.
And you know, it's the key is to find essentially something that resonates with you at the sixth sense level. Let me stress that, because oftentimes we need to be led, yes, by how we feel, but intuitively. And I think that there's something called the organoleptic evaluation that aromatherapists practice. It's how do you experience the oil? Taste, sight, touch, smell, but intuitively. And this is where, kind of going back to the discussion of 2020, 2021, we are on the verge of a true pandemic of post-traumatic stress. People, myself included, we've all been traumatized at some level, at the very least, being forced to stay in your home under your will or not, or being forced not to go to work or having your kids not go to school. Like, that's trauma that affected the entire planet. If you were to watch 1 minute of any news station, I guarantee you, you got traumatized with fear, with concern, with, and then you add political and social unrest to it. It's like, God help us. How do we even get through this year? And so we need to recognize that, let's say something traumatic happened to you and there was an aroma in the air that could literally imprint your brain to a point where now you don't realize it, but 5 months from now, you're trying to, let's say, play with some fun essential oils, and it could be orange. Again, proven antidepressant, but maybe that makes you just feel weird. Like, intuitively, you're like cautious. Well, a friend of mine, Dr. Tony Jimenez, he runs integrative cancer clinics, and he has every one of his patients go through an emotional recall therapy session or two. And at the core, what Dr. Tony has taught me was he believes cancer is at the root an emotional disorder. And that's why he has all people go through. And when Dr. Leslie, the practitioner, at least in Cancun, is doing this, I saw her do it. She utilizes aromatherapy to help imprint and remind the mind. Because as we hear, we have muscle memory. Like you could go work out and you're fit as can be. And then 5 years later, you know, you kind of forget what you're doing and you don't work out anymore. But you're like, you know what? You get bit by the New Year's resolution bug. You get your membership to Orange Theory and boom, you find yourself, yeah, I'm kind of back in this quick because your muscle has memory. Same thing as your brain through neuroplasticity. And so what he's trying to do and what Dr. Leslie tries to do is try to imprint the brain. Like, look, this smell that you were going through is your healing smell. We're going through some things in the past and you could use it as an anchor. And so theoretically, and quite frankly, true. And I'll challenge anyone, just whatever it might be. It might be a smell of a cologne. It might be a smell of a perfume that reminds you of an old lover or girlfriend or boyfriend, or maybe Thanksgiving dinner brings you right back to grandma's kitchen. But you know what it is? It's those emotions that accompany the memory. They start to be facilitated. So you literally feel the same way you felt when you're with your girlfriend or your boyfriend. It could be good, it could be bad. And the same way you smell or same way you feel when you're at Thanksgiving dinner. It's like, how does that happen? Muscle, mind memory, essentially. And so with that said, we need to be careful. We need to be careful and very much in tune with our body and how we perceive. And so if you're a clean slate, and if you're like, well, I just want to get started, you know, you're listening to your show, doc, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to start implementing these healing strategies. Well, my recommendation is choose an oil that you could be around. And you smell it, just open up the bottle, maybe go to a friend who has a great kit. Maybe he or she sells essential oils and like, look, let me try a couple. Let your nose do the experiencing for you and try to see how what just happens to you. And essentially, no response is a good response insofar as we're looking for something adverse, direct. Same thing with topical application. It's called the skin patch test, where you get a little bit of carrier oil, like coconut, a drop of essential oil, mix it up, put it in the back of your hand. Like, you should not have eruptions. You shouldn't have a rashing or burning. No reaction is a good reaction. So experience it like that and see. And if you have no reaction to a, I actually feel kind of good, well, let that be your anchor right now and build off of that. So we find ourselves, especially with young children who can't really communicate and people with pets, we have to be very, very observant to the nonverbal communication and cues of our family members. And that's something you really need to be cautious of. But with that said, though, huge disclaimer, you don't have to worry about oils around your pets or kids. I mean, that's another big myth that bothers the junk out of me is that, again, cats aren't going to die if you diffuse eucalyptus. I mean, the cat will leave the room. Just don't, seriously.
Don't hold the cat hostage over the diffuser. You know, if you hold a bottle of essential oil in front of a cat's like, And you're not trying to prove a point by saying, hey, animal that is not set up with the correct metabolic processes to manage these like I am, you must do this. I agree with you. I think it comes down to being very reasonable in your approach and really taking the pharmacist mantra of start low and go slow. Start with a small amount, use it slowly over time, increase your exposures a little bit each day, but just be really reasonable. So,
hey, can I drop a quick study on you? Sure. I think because you asked for this, I think you like this. And I'm imagining a lot of your listeners have heard of frankincense, or they might like it. There's a study that, and I'm going to give you a ratio here. This is straight from my book, The Essential Oils Apothecary. I'm going to read this because this is really, really important. Again, going back to people with hospice patients, terminal cancer. Again, these are the cancer studies we have. They took a number of hospice patients with terminal cancer, and they created a 1.5% dilution with sweet almond oil. What's that? That's a fancy way of saying 9 drops of essential oil with about an ounce of carrier oil. All right. So you start with your ounce of sweet almond, and then you add 3 drops of bergamot, 3 drops of frankincense, and 3 drops of lavender. And what the practitioners did in the study was they took these hospice patients with terminal cancer, and they did a simple 5-minute hand massage, aromatherapy, hand massage, and then they evaluated their mood and their pain levels, and they found that depression plummeted, and so did their pain. Over their body, again, we're talking terminal cancer, and their pain wasn't in their hand. Their pain was throughout their body and other isolated areas. And they found that just that simple 5-minute intervention, just weekly, had a wonderful effect on them. Again, this is the kind of study, like I quote literally hundreds of studies in my books, because this kind of stuff is out there. But the reason I wanted this one is notice the blend. And this is my favorite thing about research. They give us the recipes. Like, you don't have to mess around a lot. You don't have to be like, oh, I got all these oils. What do? I got the XYZ kit from my favorite company. No. Bergamot, lavender, and frankincense. And this is equal parts of each. Simple. And again, 3 drops of each in a 1 ounce carrier oil. They use sweet almond for a variety of reasons, but it's easy to penetrate. It's very nutritious anyway. And that was it. Like, imagine now trying that on a, let's say, back rub. Or imagine that you use that same ratio, because it's safe, as a post-shower massage. I'm sorry, a post-shower moisturizer, because that's what we use for body care, this kind of stuff. And if you like the smell, I love bergamot, by the way. I love how it blends with frankincense, and you add lavender to it. Maybe this is what you do. You put this on yourself, over your skin, and, you know, give your loved one or a child a foot rub like my wife does every night before we put the kids to bed. Maybe this might bring a different routine for you to help you throughout the day. But there are unlimited, like literally hundreds of these little recipes and ratios. And the reality is, maybe you don't have bergamot. Well, try orange, because it's in, you know, it was same in the citrus.
Mix and
family.
Match it. Make it right? Work. Absolutely. I think people try to make essential oil so complicated when really they can be so very simple. Well, clearly you and I have a lot to talk about and so many overlapping areas of interest. It's been a joy to talk to you today. I'd like to give you just one quick last question, which is a little bit out of thin air, but I think it'll be one that you will excel at answering. I always love to know what motivates people to do what they do. And you are unapologetically on a spiritual mission when it comes to essential oils. And I would just love, in the last 90 seconds or so, why do you think spirituality and engagement and interaction with God and things that are bigger than you are so important to health?
You know, as a Christian, there's a verse that's become essentially my mantra, my life verse, is that our bodies are the temples of the Holy Spirit. I feel, and this is where I resonate with a lot of people of other faiths, because we all agree on this. If you see yourself as a temple, this body, you have a moral obligation to take care of it. And you know what? I don't cheat. I can't cheat. If I cheat, meaning I haven't had a McDonald's, I haven't had a burger, I haven't had a Frosty, I haven't had a cigarette since I became a Christian 18 years ago. I'm not tempted to. I can't cheat myself. I can't cheat my God. I can't cheat what is beyond me. at the fundamental level, I'm accountable to the umpteenth level, where I believe that. I believe it's my spiritual act of worship. And I do believe that what I do honors God, honors who I am as a person. And that transformed everything. And if someone's struggling with food or addiction, or if someone, whatever it might be, having that accountability and that empowerment, but also realizing, though, that you do have that power behind you to get through, because I don't believe we've been given anything that we can't handle. Mm. So with that said, I'm just overflowing with gratitude and gratefulness, because I know what it's like to truly be sick. Mm. I was depressed. I had suicidal thoughts. I dealt with addiction. I abused narcotics. I get it. I was depressed. And coming from that, it's like night and day. And so now that I'm in the light, I want to help people see the light. And so for me, my walk is, in my faith, is at the core of everything that I do. And I can't separate my mind, my body, and my soul or my spirit.
Yeah, it's such a great personal motivation for you. And I think it is a personal motivation that resonates with so many people on so many different levels and in so many different ways. And I think sometimes we allow all of those interpretations of spirituality and God and everything that's out there, we allow it to fracture us. But when you hear somebody speak about, look, I just really want to take care of myself, because it motivates me to know that I'm giving my best to this life and to the God that is there and bigger than me and gives me that purpose. I agree with you. I just think that we allow it to separate us, but it can really bring us together to all just say we have so much to acknowledge that we have in common, and to just celebrate in these amazing lives that we get to lead. Dr. Z, it has been so much fun talking to you today. Listeners, if you want to learn more about Dr. Zielinski, you can head to www.naturalfamilyliving.com. Thank you so much for coming and being a guest on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. I can't wait to come back.
Congratulations to Krissa Janke, who is the winner of the very first ever Lindsay Elmore Show giveaway. For all of you that did not win, you are in luck. Between now and April 6th, all that you have to do to be entered to win a collection of exclusive Lindsay Elmore Show swag is head to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the show. If you've already rated and reviewed the show, number one, thank you. And number two, you are entered. I am so grateful for you, and I hope that you win. If you have not rated and reviewed the show, head to Apple Podcast, drop us in a rating and a review, and do remember your Apple ID that you use to log into Apple Podcast, because we'll be selecting a winner on April the 6th and announcing it live on the show soon thereafter. Go ahead, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It helps us get the pod to more people. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Kelsey Lorman. Production design, sound design, and editing is by Jive Media. If you have a question about this or any other episode of the podcast, send us an email to hello@lindsayelmoreshow.com. And hey, since you're still here, take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And while you're at it, go over and follow us on Instagram @Lindsay Elmore Show. This helps us bring the pod to more people.